Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 4, Hidden Worlds, Part 3.
So the simulations run, in terms of the sort of internal time, the time in their own universe, for about 13.5 billion years. In terms of external time, the time they're actually sitting in a supercomputer running, it can be anything from, you know, a few days up to a few weeks or even a few months.
This is Andrew.
I'm Andrew Ponson.
And he's a cosmologist.
Actually, I'm a theoretical cosmologist, which means that I work with advanced tools like pencils and paper.
And he's particularly interested in the way the universe is put together.
What it looked like when it was young, the way it's evolved since then, and trying to really, I suppose, on the broadest level, it's trying to make sense of where we've come from.
Considering the size and the age of the universe, that's a fairly daunting task. But we've got lots of different ways we can investigate this question.
The obvious one is to look up in the sky, and of course a lot of people do just that.
But this isn't particularly useful when you're studying objects like galaxies that grow and evolve over millions or even billions of years.
Occasionally end up using supercomputers, which are basically like a computer that you know and love, but a whole bunch of them wired together with a super fast network, like broadband gone mad.
Cosmologists like Andrew can use these machines to recreate the conditions of the early universe.
They're just racks and racks and racks of computers, and they have little blinking lights. It looks a bit futuristic. You can just stare at these machines, and it is a kind of odd thought to think that they've got this little internal world in there.
A model universe ticking away inside a black box.
Cosmology, I guess, has always been kind of on the forefront of computers, because one of the things we want to do is take the basic laws of physics, which actually we know surprisingly well, and push them into kind of extreme limits where there's a lot of stuff interacting in very complicated ways, and try and make predictions about what people should see when they look into the universe.
But before you can arrive at anything like this, you need to set some ground rules and add in some core ingredients, those thankfully provided by the likes of Newton and Einstein, what Andrew would call his inputs.
You tell the computer what you think the laws of physics are. And the laws of physics essentially boil down to a set of equations that make predictions. If you know what's happening now, it makes a prediction about what's going to happen next. And another input is actually, what do we think the universe looked like when it was very young? Because it's not enough just to say, well, what happens if things get pushed in a certain way? You also have to say, well, how are things set up to start with? And so what a simulation does is it takes what you think the universe looked like when it was very young, and then it uses these equations to work out, well, what happened a little bit later than that? And then uses the equations again to say, well, a little bit later than that. And it keeps going through billions of years, just sort of stepping forwards and forwards and forwards.
A little bit later than that.
A little bit later than that.
A little bit later than that.
Forwards and
until eventually, hopefully, you come to something that looks like the universe at the present day.
You have to set a mathematical framework or a sandbox within which your universe can evolve. And this is where you can get creative.
You can try out different possible starting points for the universe, different possible setups for how it started out, and see then, well, what would the universe look like today if it started out in these different possible ways?
But there's a catch.
There's a real danger, because you've got some freedom, you don't really quite know how some of this stuff works, you might bias yourself and just keep twiddling knobs until you get what you were expecting to see. And that's a real worry, and can create a lot of controversy in this field.
And if this wasn't enough, our simulations can only ever be approximations for what's actually out there.
It turns out the universe is a complicated, horrible place, and things happening on really small scales. One of the biggest problems with simulations is you're always choosing to leave things out, because you're trying to simulate the whole universe, you know. And that means that you can't possibly simulate things all the way down to the scale of atoms, let alone subatomic particles.
Even with our super smart computers, things need to get simplified. It's just not possible to recreate the complexity of our universe inside a computer. Well, not yet, anyway.
It's not like they have an internal universe quite like our own, because of this ultimate problem that we hit this wall, that we can't actually track things in the universe on scales much smaller than, well, actually, you know, tens of thousands of stars. So it's a very blobby version of a universe. We have to supplement the basic laws of physics with a kind of set of rules. It's frustrating because it makes the whole thing sort of approximate in a way that we would really rather it wasn't.
But despite this, these simulations are still capable of telling us new things about our universe, especially in the case of how normal matter interacts with strange stuff like dark matter, the mysterious and invisible substance that seems to play a role in the formation and in the fate of galaxies.
People have kind of assumed that the dark matter does what it likes and then pulls the normal matter around behind it. But it turns out that we discovered almost by accident in some simulations dark matter itself being reshaped by stuff that was going on in the normal matter, the visible matter, which is kind of a surprise.
Especially because the amount of dark matter in the universe far exceeds the amount of normal matter, the stuff that makes up you, me, walruses and planets.
A lot of energy bouncing around in the normal matter, and if you can get a bit of that energy into the dark matter, then it really changes what the dark matter is doing. And actually, you know, at first we thought, well, this seems a bit wrong. How is the energy jumping from the normal matter into the dark matter?
And this is when it's useful to step back from the computers.
Trying to simplify it, writing down equations on bits of paper and just staring at them, more or less, we've kind of realised that this is actually a genuine process that could happen, and increasingly we think probably does happen in the real universe, where just from the gravitational tugs of normal matter being thrown around quite violently, the gravitational tug of that on the dark matter is enough to actually reshape the distribution of dark matter. I just genuinely find it really exciting to try and unravel what makes the universe tick. And I think we have, you know, a real opportunity to do that with this kind of combination of different techniques.
Just sort of stepping forwards and forwards and forwards. Forwards and forwards and forwards. Forwards and forwards and forwards. Just sort of stepping forwards and forwards and forwards.
And it keeps going.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Chris Lintott, and produced by Ed Prosser. You can find a full list of credits and much else besides on our website at oxfordsparks.net.